The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, as we are inside, cozy inside, the Quicken Loans Studios right here in Houston, Texas. And how about the Ohio State Buckeyes with the unexpected national title, winning with youth? And to quote head coach Urban Meyer, the pursuit of the chase, it is complete. His Buckeyes, they certainly accepted the final mission, the final assignment, and the final directive, and they did it in a big, big way, being led by their quarterback, Cardale Jones, and sophomore running back Ezekiel Elliott. Tonight we're going to recap the Buckeyes' incredible run. We're also going to get some insight on some of the coaching changes and the movement that has taken place with Oklahoma football right there in Norman. Always a pleasure to have back with us Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 out of Oklahoma City, and also the Sports Animal. He, of course, is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. How are you, Bob? It's good to have you with us.
Hi, E. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. And right now, fresh on my mind is that game on Monday night. When you look back on that, what was the single biggest reason why the Buckeyes prevailed and they dominated?
I think Urban Meyer is the best coach in college football is what I think, and kind of got a full dose of that front view back in the day when he was at Florida, when they beat Sam Bradford and Jermaine Gresham and the Sooners.
Oh, back
in, yes. I want to say, what, 2008, after the 2008 season, and so I was pretty impressed with him then. How can you not be impressed with the coaching job he did this year to go through all those quarterbacks? They weren't even in the playoff until they won by almost 60 points in the Big Ten title game. And then they not only get in there, they sweep past everybody, including Bama and Oregon. I mean, I don't know that we've seen a better coaching job in a long while.
You know, Bobby, what do you think, and talking about Urban Meyer, I mean, what makes him so great and so effective? Because it really has been, there's so many different areas that's been remarkable. I mean, how he's been able to get his quarterbacks to respond in so many different ways.
Well, it's got to be a system of accountability and discipline. But I tell you, you can kind of see how his demeanor has changed, and that's probably for the betterment of his health. He had that kind of burnout syndrome at Florida, and everybody around him, his family, his children, all talk about how he's just such a different guy now. And he must have used the word love about 1,000 times after the game the other night.
It's true.
And I would be loving on all my people, too, if I just won a national title. But but it just seems like he's more at peace with himself, and yet he must be the same guy on the football field in terms of how he coaches and how he demands a lot of his guys. They all respond to that. But the situation at quarterback, it's just amazing to me. I mean, usually when you have three quarterbacks, you have none. And in this case, he had three that were all really good, so much so that the guy who was the Heisman Trophy candidate at the beginning of last year is considered the third best of the three he's got there, if Braxton Miller even chooses to come back. It's amazing.
Hey, Bob Berry Jr., joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line, and that's where we're going to go right now. Talk to me about in 2015. I mean, obviously, this logjam of quarterbacks. Who should stay? Who should go?
Well, I know I would want to keep Cardale Jones there. I don't know how you can think of anything better for a guy other than starting, who just took you to three huge wins in the Big Ten title game, the national semifinals, and the national championship game, and yet JT Barrett was sensational when he was in there, the freshman from Wichita Falls, during the year until he got hurt. And you thought, oh, well, that's it. You know, too bad. That'll ruin a really good Buckeye season. And we know what Cardale Jones did. So I think both those guys come back. I'll probably be surprised if Braxton Miller stays with that, what do we call it, the Russell Wilson rule anymore these days, where you can get your degree and leave and go play 1 year somewhere else. There have been, you know, rumors of that. I've never heard anything official come out of Braxton Miller's mouth, but you know, even some Oklahoma fans have brought up on their wish list, hey, get Braxton Miller to Norman to play under this new offense and get Oklahoma going. So I'll probably be surprised if Braxton Miller returns to Columbus, but the other two guys, I think, will return.
You know, so many great quarterbacks in college football, Jameis Winston, Cardale Jones, Marcus Mariota. Who would you pick in terms of when you talk about the NFL? Who's a better long-term projection?
Well, it seems the safest play, Elissa, would be Marcus Mariota in terms of what he has and then his demeanor and then no distractions with off-the-field stuff. You know, Jameis Winston has talent through the roof. We know that, but he's also got baggage that would concern you, especially with stuff that's happened to Johnny Manziel and stuff that, you know, Cam Newton had to fight through when he won the Heisman and then went into the pros. When, as people say, when you show up at the facility as a coach or a general manager or player personnel guy and then you don't really know what you have when that player arrives, that's got to be a concern. And I think with Jameis Winston, I would have that concern, no matter how talented he is. With Marcus Mariota, it just seems like he's got to have all the leadership qualities in the world. I'm not willing to coronate him just yet. I heard some national guy compare him to Aaron Rodgers right after he won the Heisman. I thought, whoa, wait a minute, let's see, you know. And but I do like everything about him on the field. I can't guarantee stardom whatsoever, but he just looks like a guy that you would feel comfortable about drafting way high, if not number one overall.
What about the future for Cardale Jones? What system would he perhaps fit into best?
Man, he's a remarkable kid. When I watch him play, I go, you know, he could be wearing jersey number 97 and be, you know, a sack leader in the NFL as a defensive tackle. I mean, he's just so big. He reminds me of Jamarcus Russell with his body type, and I certainly I hope for his sake his NFL career flourishes a lot more than Jamarcus Russell did, but in terms of his college build, he looks like Russell. He's got this cannon for an arm. He made so many plays running over Oregon guys the other day and converting with his legs. I was totally impressed by that, but his poise, his ability to shake off the rush and shake off would-be tacklers, behind the line of scrimmage. So I think he's where he is. He made really good decisions and really good throws. So as big as I think he is, I don't know that he's done growing. I'd probably keep him a quarterback on the college level anyway.
I think you nailed it, Bobby, talking about the poise that Cardale Jones has. I mean, you're talking about his third start in a national title game, and that, once again, you got to go back to Urban Meyer, just his influence and how he has really accelerated the maturation process in this young man.
Well, and I want to see, you know, I don't know a whole lot about the staff makeup, but Tom Herman is leaving to become the head coach at Houston, so now you can have a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterbacks coach. Tim Beck's coming in to guide the Buckeyes quarterbacks, and Ed Warner's going to be the offensive coordinator. So that will definitely have an effect, I would think, some kind of way. But yet, you know, if we are to believe Coach Meyer, didn't he say that 2015 was the year everybody was pointing to? So if that's the case, everybody ought to be scared to death about Ohio State's success level coming up.
Time to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will continue our conversation with Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 in Oklahoma City. Hey, you're listening to the voice of the great Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 in Oklahoma City tonight on Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're breaking it all down. Okay, what about Marcus Mariota? Does his stock, did it drop quite a bit after Oregon? Just, they simply weren't able to get things done. I mean, Ohio State really did look bigger, stronger, and faster.
Yeah, and I certainly don't blame the loss on Mariota. It isn't like he turned it over. Remember, Ohio State's the team that turned it over four times, so I thought Marcus kind of did all he could. He had some receivers. He didn't help him at all with early drops in that game. And I thought he actually kind of showed pretty well in the game. Like I said, I didn't put it on him. He didn't play defense. He wasn't the one being assaulted by Ohio State's offense, in the run game and with Cardale Jones passing. So now I think Mariota's stock is just fine. And like I said, I'll probably be surprised if he's not the number one overall pick.
Hey, you ever seen a team like the Buckeyes respond to so many chaotic situations and ultimately be able to come out on top? I mean, burning through three quarterbacks?
I would be lying to you if I said I watched them a bunch. You know why? Because I saw them against Virginia Tech early in the year at home. They looked horrible, and they got beat by a very average, if not below average, Virginia Tech team. So I kind of put a line through them, Elissa, when that happened. I go, well, who cares about Ohio State and typical Big Ten? Everybody's down. Michigan's no good. Michigan State's just all right. Wisconsin's okay. I mean, and now look at how we view the Big Ten now with Ohio State doing what they've done. They win a national title. Michigan goes out and hires Jim Harbaugh, and you're all of a sudden the Big Ten is the glory league coming up. I mean, what a boost for that conference that needed it in the most desperate way.
I was going to say a huge inoculation with the addition of Jim Harbaugh, but what about your thoughts in the national championship game without an SEC team? I mean, that was huge in its sense.
Loved it, absolutely loved it, of course, being a guy who's covered the Big 12 and we're tired of hearing about the SEC. But, no, I was shocked by Ohio State beating Alabama. I mean, I didn't think, you know, for whatever reason, I believe, you know, we need to keep an eye on Kirby Smart and some of these guys at Alabama that coach defense, because Nick Saban's got to be unhappy with the way teams have kind of, you know, mowed through Alabama's defense the last few years. And it didn't just start with Oklahoma and the Sugar Bowl. You know, Auburn had a ton of yards in that game that they had to win on a 108-yard field goal return. But then Auburn this year, you know, had what? That unbelievable first half when they had almost 400 yards at halftime. They scored 44 in the game anyway, and Alabama had to win a shootout. So it just seems like Bama, for whatever reason, even under the brilliant Nick Saban, have had a really tough time stopping these high-powered, quick-tempo offenses. And so that has to be a little bit concerning if you're Bama. Now, and look at what happened to the Mississippi schools, Alyssa.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
So much attention was paid to Ole Miss and Mississippi State early in the season, and at the end of the year, those guys were nowhere. And TCU just absolutely destroyed Ole Miss in the bowl game, which was a big feather in the Big 12's cap because they had a bad bowl season. So I think the thing that I came out of, besides Ohio State's brilliance in winning it all, was how bad they probably felt in Fort Worth going, man, we should have been in that playoff because TCU was playing as well as anybody at the end of the year.
You know, we give a lot of love and praise to Urban Meyer, but just Gary Patterson, the job that he has done within that program has just been remarkable.
Well, it has. So many different leagues, so many years. When they came into the Big 12, they struggled for a few seasons, and to his credit, he said, you know what, I've got to go run an offense that I maybe don't know about, but I'll get some guys that do. So then he gets Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham to retool that offense, and look what they did to Trevon Boykin. So that's how I really give it up to Coach Patterson for that, where he was willing to kind of go out of his comfort zone and find something else that works. And look at them. I mean, they would have to be, in my mind, it's Ohio State and TCU in the preseason rankings next year, 1-2.
Absolutely. He's got the Midas touch and certainly has accomplished a lot. Let's transition now. Let's head up I-35. Talk to me about the Sooners. Massive change has taken place. The program certainly did need a big-time facelift, and it started with a new offensive coordinator.
Which surprised me, to be honest with you. I thought Oklahoma's defense was awful most of the season, and I really thought the changes would start there on the defensive side of the scrimmage line. So when they didn't, was a little surprised, because Oklahoma's offense, you know, they scored 30, 33, and 35 points in three of their losses. That ought to be plenty. But yeah, Josh Heupel was sent on his way, as was Jay Norvell. And these had to be tough decisions for Bob Stoops, Alyssa, because, you know, Josh Heupel was his only national champion quarterback when Oklahoma won it all in 2000. And basically Bob Stoops raised him in the coaching profession. And Jay Norvell was a lifelong buddy of Bob Stoops. I think they go back 30 years to their playing days at Iowa. So for him to launch those two guys was big. Now they bring in Lincoln Riley. All I can do is tell you, you know, he comes with high regard. He's so young, 31 years old from East Carolina, but he has a Texas Tech background. It was a little surprising to me, though, because Riley is so joined at the hip with Mike Leach, mm-hmm. and so was Josh Heupel. So it seems to me you had a Mike Leach guy and Josh Heupel, and you just replaced him with a Mike Leach guy and Lincoln Riley. So a bit surprising. We'll see. Maybe fresh blood will enthuse Oklahoma's offense. But like I said, for the most part, their offense with Samaje Perine and some of those guys, they need receivers for sure, and they need consistent play at quarterback when they're still looking for that guy. But yet they had their moments in games when they did plenty enough to win. It was a defense that couldn't stop anybody. So when Bobby Jack Wright announced his retirement the other day, the cornerbacks coach for Oklahoma, they've now got an opening to get a secondary guy. They promoted Jerry Montgomery, the defensive line coach, to co-coordinator. They really like his recruiting ability and his coaching ability. But they still got to be a lot better on defense in 2015 to contend for anything, I think.
Absolutely. We are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to hear from you. Join in on the conversation at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And you can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. Talking about the changes that have taken place with Oklahoma football, do you think that Josh Heupel, that he should have been removed?
Well, it was just, you know, like I said, it was a problem. You know, offensive coordinators are obviously the most popular or unpopular, depending on how what the team is doing on the field. It was a disastrous season for Oklahoma by any stretch of the imagination. You have to look at and say, with all what they were expected to do, they were in everybody's top four at the beginning of the year, and to finish no better than fourth in the conference and lose five times and then have that atrocious bowl performance against Clemson when they trailed 40-0 after three quarters, and they were going up against, ironically, their former defensive coordinator,
Brad Venables.
And he was basically run off of the job. You know, he was basically removed when Mike Stoops was brought back to work with his brother again. Venables was forced out. And Now he goes and just hammers his old team, gets a huge save. Now he's making $1.3 million with a smile from earlobe to earlobe at Clemson, and so it was just awful. And new changes had to occur. That's why I don't think they're done yet. There could even be some more changes on that staff before spring ball begins in Norman.
Hey, just a few more minutes with Bob Berry Jr. tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Brent Venables talking about the defensive coordinator with the Clemson Tigers. You're talking about that big raise, what, a $500,000 raise, is that correct?
Yeah, and I think he deserved it. I mean, they had the number one defense in the country, and they certainly didn't have any problems hammering Oklahoma. It's just amazing the pay scale, how it's increased for assistants. I guess John Chavis went to join, A&M now? Listen, he's making $0.7 million as a defensive coordinator, the highest paid assistant coach in the country. It's amazing. The assistants have come a long way from back in the day when $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 was the norm, and that wasn't too long ago.
I know. So what is your confidence level as we look ahead to 2015? Are they going to be able to resurrect and turn this baby around?
Oh, I don't know. I was shocked the other day when one of the bookmakers in Vegas or one of the casinos or something came out and had Oklahoma a 12-1 favorite to win it all next year. I'm going, what exactly are you guys looking at here? This isn't 1985. Mm-hmm. It's 2015, so... I just think, you know, sometimes when you don't know anything, you go by the names you recognize. But in my mind, Oklahoma is slipping in that name recognition department. They'll tell you they need facilities. Well, they're trying to raise almost $400 million to upgrade their facilities. But 8-5 makes a lot of people hesitant to write big checks. So it seems to me it's got to start on the field. You've got to get better players. You got to play a lot better. And then that will enthuse people, even in this era of low oil prices, which has a big thing.
It's been crazy.
Economy.
Yes.
People don't pay that enough attention, but where I live, that's huge. I mean, the oil price of oil is down. Therefore, a lot of your boosters are struggling economically. So, you know, that's got to play into it. But 8-5 might as well have been 0-13, you know, anywhere else. And so they've got to get better players. They've got to get more hungry, more aggressive on the recruiting trail. Alyssa, I think they need to shrink their recruiting base back to the Texas roots that got him so successful, even in the Coach Stoops' early years, and certainly when Coach Switzer was there. And skip back to that stuff, because Baylor and TCU are getting all those Texas kids. Oklahoma State has more than 70 Texas kids on their roster, and they're playing better than Oklahoma right now.
Hey, one of the best in the business, Bob Berry Jr. with News Channel 4 breaking it all down. I know he's a big Packers fan, so he'll be having his eye watching the NFC Championship. So go Packers for you. Okay, Bobby?
Thank you. If we could just get about, 12 or 15 of those Seattle Seahawks to come down with the flu or something before Sunday, that would really be good for me. Alyssa, thank you very much. Love listening to you.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. You stay close. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, where we always deliver the biggest and best in sports. And you never know who's going to drop by on a Friday night right here at YSR. NFL coaching legend, a distinguished guy, and of course that is Dick Vermeil. Welcome aboard. It's good to have you with us in Houston. Are you going to warm us up a bit?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I didn't bring it with me, though. Believe me, it's cold in the East when I flew in here yesterday, but... yeah, we love coming to Houston.
Well, it is certainly a big weekend. The NFL's Final Four, the AFC, the NFC Championship. But I actually want to start off our conversation by just sending out and extending a congratulations to you on being inducted into the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame. That is a huge honor. Share a little bit about that.
Well, really, the reason I was inducted, first Brent Musburger introduced me to them and I think motivated the board a little bit, but because I'm the only coach that ever coached the game and won it and then came back and broadcast the game. So they created a little category that moved a guy that had only been in the Rose Bowl one time into the Hall of Fame because he's the only guy that broadcast the game as well a few times. So it's a real honor, and they treated us like king and queens out there. It was just a wonderful experience in every way.
Well, we have to take our audience back to 1976. You were the head coach of the UCLA Bruins, and you pulled off the ultimate upset. It was against the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Right.
They were the number one team in the country. That was huge. Share a little bit about that.
Well, they had beaten us. I think it was 43 to 10 in the regular season, something like that. They'd beaten us badly in an interconference game. So when we kept improving and earned the right by winning then the Pac-8, and they won the Big Ten undefeated and were slated to be the national champion, we had the chance to play them again. And we were 15.5-point underdogs, and we beat them soundly. And it was just the team had matured. My coaching staff did a great job, and things went well. John Shira, my quarterback, was voted the most valuable player in the game and just went into the NCAA College Football Hall of Fame. So that proved we had good players. And Yeah, it was a big, big thrill. And it's still considered, which I found out being there, the biggest upset in the history of the Rose Bowl.
2 years as the head coach at UCLA. Did you always have aspirations to want to take your game to the next level? Because then your next stint was heading to the Eagles.
Well, you know, I had been an assistant at the Rams, so I knew what it was like to coach in pro football. But I wasn't just, real motivated to go in the NFL. I loved my head coaching job. But, you know, in those days, they didn't pay college football coaches like they did today. I was making $30,000 a year when we won the Rose Bowl game, and I got a raise to $32,500 for winning the game. And serious. And all of a sudden, someone comes and offers you a pro contract at $50,000 a year, up to $75,000 after there. That was a lot of money. And I liked pro football, and I didn't have to worry about summer job programs, grades, and teenager problems. So I went.
We are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Dick Vermeil is joining us on our Progressive Insurance guest line. Of course, the NFL coaching legend. And here in the open, I was talking about just the success you had back at UCLA and coming up with that huge win against the Ohio State Buckeyes. They were the number one team in the country in 76. Do you follow college football that much? I mean, obviously what Urban Meyer was able to accomplish this year, it was really phenomenal.
Right. He did a great job. He's done a great job wherever he's been. And he's also been in a situation where he's always going to have good players. University of Florida is always going to have good players. Ohio State is always going to have good players. Uh-huh. Now, he's the caliber coach that takes the good players and makes them great players. And that's why they win national championships. He's done a great job, and he's going to win some more.
Well, the influence that he had on his third-string quarterback in Cardale Jones, I mean, that was absolutely huge. Yeah. I mean, have you ever seen a college program, flush out and have to go through so many different difficult situations? It was chaotic. But then to ultimately have a starting quarterback win it all, his only third time playing.
Well, you know, only a school like Ohio State or Alabama or Florida could do something like that, because your young players waiting for the opportunity to play and mature and develop the skills to be a starter, they're there. But they haven't played yet, and that's what happened this time. You know, the second-string guy came in and played extremely well. They win. He gets hurt. Now here comes Ordell, and he plays better than expected, but the talent is there. There's depth at every position, and that's what allows them to end up being national champions.
Let's zero in on the quarterback position, because obviously you have coached some of the greats. I think back to 99, winning it all, the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner, and then also the opportunity with Eagles with Ron Jaworski. What separates or differentiates a quarterback? What are some of those attributes from being good to being great and making them really special?
Well, the great ones are normally very fine leaders. They're very bright. They're very good under pressure. And maybe most importantly, they're very accurate, regardless of what time of pass you're asking them to throw and what environment. They throw well when they have a lot of time. They throw well when they don't have a lot of time. They throw well on the move. They throw well on the back foot. They throw when everything is not perfect, because, you know, people are getting paid to get after them and not give them time to throw. And Kurt Warner could throw extremely accurate under pressure. He could throw, he could vary the delivery and throw it accurately. And he had tremendous poise. And the other thing he had is, like I say, like Michael Jordan, the last play of the game, the Super Bowl, he was in it, he threw a touchdown pass to win it. Okay? The last play the week before in the NFC Championship game, he threw a pass to win it. Okay? He goes all the way to Arizona, Phoenix, and he's playing the pit in one game there. The last pass he throws should win the game, and then Pittsburgh came back and won it. But in three of the biggest games in his life, the last pass he threw was the touchdown to win the game. Not many people have those attributes.
He is a winner, no doubt about it. When I think of Kurt Warner, the poise, the character, the integrity. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, it was a difficult year in the NFL, kind of a bruised eye from just all the different transgressions that took place with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
How much does... You know, Coach Vermeil, how much does in character, how much is that of a value do you place on that when you were looking at players?
I put a very high price tag on character and quality of the athlete. And sometimes you make a mistake anyway. Sometimes people give you poor advice, poor information on evaluating his integrity. But most of the time you get the straight scoop. And sometimes some people need some time. And, you know, there's no correlation between age and maturity. There, you know, sometimes a kid's ready at 19, 20, 21 years old and really come along fine. Another guy's 25, 26, 27. What you have to do as a coach is look for the attributes and the qualities in a player that you think when it's his time, he will be ready to play and play it at with the value system that the entire organization represents.
Did you know that Kurt Warner was going to exceed so many different expectations? I mean, he was just phenomenal. How did you bring out the best in him?
Well, I didn't know. I thought he could play. I really did. And Kurt will tell you this. When he made the final cut his first year there, okay, coming out of the – we sent him to Europe to play in the European League, coming out of arena football. I walked by him in the hall, and I said to him, Kurt, there's something about you I like, and I can't wait to find out what it is. But there, I just had a hunch. And it came down to a close decision to keep him or let him go. And the other thing people don't know, his name was on the expansion draft. He could have been taken off our roster for nothing. Mm. We put him out there because we had to put up so many players for the expansion teams, and everybody passed him by. But fortunately, no one took him. I didn't think anybody would. If I knew somebody was going to take him, I wouldn't have put him there. But anyway, I thought he could play because we were going to be a good football team and he could keep us winning. I had no way could I predict he could be the most valuable player in the Super Bowl.
You know, I highlight and talk about Kurt Warner. Give me a Grant Wistrom story. Jason Peter is a weekly guest on our radio show. And of course, those guys are best friends. And Jason said, be sure and ask Coach Vermeil that you understand that you had to wake up Grant.
I'll give you a good story on Grant.
Okay, talk to me about Grant.
Grant's one of my favorites.
Is he? Okay.
I have, you know, all coaches have favorites. And I drafted him in the first round of Brawling St. Louis. So that's how much I thought about it. We're playing Cincinnati in Cincinnati in 1999. And it's a day game, and we're going to fly back. In fact, Carol and I had tickets to go see Celine Dion that night. Mm-hmm. That was really exciting. Well, the plane has problems, so we have to stay at the airport in Cincinnati. We can't go. So I asked the bartender, hey, these guys are meant to keep the bar open. Let the kids have some beer, and we'll get some grub. And hey, we were there 3 or 4 hours, and needless to say, they had quite a few beers. Well, we fly home, and Grant Wistrom lives about 3 doors down from Carol and I in our townhouse. So the next morning, I get up to go to work, Monday morning early, to go to work, and there's a note on my door. Coach, wake me up as you head out. Grant Wistrom.
Legendary coach Dick Vermeil. We have got to step aside for a quick commercial break. We want you to rejoin us as we're going to be talking to one of the game's finest, the great Dick Vermeil. Right. Hey, NFL coaching legend Dick Vermeil is with us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Here in just a moment, we're going to talk about how he turned a hobby into a post-football career with Vermeil Wines. We've got them all right here lined up. This is going to kind of be like Kathy Lee Gifford and Hoda when they're drinking wine on set, but I'm trying to be a good girl. I'm trying to be a good girl right now. But we do want to get your take. It's a big weekend in the NFL with the NFL's Final Four, the AFC, the NFC championships. What chances do you give the Packers on coming away with a win against Seattle?
Oh, I think they can go there and win. Okay. You know, I think the team that doesn't turn the ball away or turn it around, say the team that takes the ball away from the opponent is going to win the ball game. Turnovers in good teams, big games usually decide the winner. And Green Bay is certainly capable of beating Seattle. Seattle certainly capable of beating Green Bay. I would give them a 50-50 chance of winning the football game. I really would. I've studied both teams in detail, and each team has some strengths and weaknesses, but it'll come down to a simple term, best team on game day.
What is your evaluation of Russell Wilson? Our very own Sean Salisbury has been on our show many times, and we've really talked about him a lot, and just a remarkable young man and what he's been able to do. You were talking about poise earlier. Yeah. He certainly has it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's mature for his age in the National Football League, right?
Yeah.
And, no, I think he's a spectacular player. I think he's actually underrated as a passer. You know,
he's quarterback. He's undersized.
I know. His quarterback efficiency rating is 95. Which is better than the average winning Super Bowl quarterback over 25 years. So, I mean, this guy's a fine player. Now, they automatically think he's not as good a passer as somebody else because he's shorter and he runs a lot. But a week or so ago, he threw some balls downfield. He looked like Rodgers. Okay.
Absolutely. Hey, Dick Vermeil with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, so we hit on the Packers and the Seahawks. Talk to me about the Colts and the Patriots. How do you see this playing out? I just want Andrew Luck to shave that beard. It's just awful.
You know, you're not the first person that said that to me today. But anyway, I'd say this. I can't see Indianapolis going there and beating New England
right.
Patriots, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick mm-hmm. in New England. It is really tough to do. I thought Baltimore should have beaten them last week. Really, I think Baltimore on that in that game, to me, that day was the best team of the two. They didn't win it. The trick play beat them, really, and that's all part of football. But I think it'll be a good football game, but I don't think Indianapolis can go there and beat them. I just don't think they can. Now, if Tom Brady plays poorly in a big game, which is highly unusual or almost impossible, then it can happen. You know, again, the best team game day.
Dick Vermeil with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We want you to connect with us. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. Of course, Dick Vermeil, 15 seasons in the NFL as a head coach. And I got to ask you this. You were with the Eagles for 7 years, and then you stepped away from the game. I mean, I know the hours are crippling. It's intense. It's a pressurized environment. How difficult was that for you to step away after you guys had just reached the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, it was... I made it more difficult than it had to be. You know, I allowed a passion to become an obsession, and I just couldn't turn it off. And when my own personality, emotional, intense, and those kind of things, it added up to my wife and I decided I needed a break for my own personal health. So I decided I would take a year off. I didn't anticipate having an opportunity in national television. I went to work. I went from making $75,000 a year, working year-round 24 hours a day, to working 16 games a year, making $150,000.
Wow.
I was stealing for a living. You know, I said, wow.
And Carol probably loved it, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, she did. She loved it. And it was fun. And I had opportunities to go back, and I was a little bit chicken. I didn't want to find myself in the same state of mind I was when I left. And because I wasn't the coach I thought I was prior to really emotionally running out of gas. And fortunately, Georgia Frontier, John Shaw, and Jay Sigmund gave me the opportunity to come back in 97. I took it. I took that job because I felt, you know, at that age, mm-hmm. you get in your 60s, not many people are going to offer a job to a guy who's been out of coaching for 14 years. So I said, all right, I'm going back. And it went well.
Well, there's a saying that a bow that is always bent will eventually break. So yeah. You really did have to recharge and refocus, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't have when I look back now, I didn't have a choice. I did the right thing selfishly for myself.
How did you handle the intensity of the NFL environment? Because one can't understand that unless you've been a part of it.
Well, obviously, I didn't handle it well enough my first 7 years as the head coach, you know, because I just couldn't turn it off. And
but the second time around, what did you do different?
Well, I was, you know, I'm 60-something years old now. And I better knew myself. I spent time with people that study personalities and study the term burnout, and I listened to them this time. I didn't listen when people...
Did you delegate? Did you outsource more?
And I became a more mature leader. Mm-hmm. And I recognized that I didn't have to do it all myself. And maybe one of my most important things to do is build an environment in which everybody working there enjoyed being there and making a contribution. And then when you recognize people that can make a big contribution, make sure you give them more time to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And keep the environment where they felt good about it. And all head coaches have coordinators, but I allowed my coordinators to coach more than I did the first time around. And I didn't call my own plays. I did a little bit off and on, but very little. And I delegated and I led. And I think it worked good. We won. Yeah.
During that 15-year sabbatical, what did you miss the most?
I missed the players. I missed the relationship with the coaches, the bonding. As you know, as an athlete, it's hard to be in any other kind of walk of life where you develop the relationships that you develop in a locker room, in the competition, the heat of battle, and
right.
the highs and the lows, the emotions, and the intensity, and the caring for each other. People don't realize how much of that really is developed in an intense NFL locker room.
And it's more than coaching. I mean, it's almost like being a father figure to so many of these guys. And that's got to be so rewarding as a coach, seeing how these guys blossom and develop. And really, in many ways, they grow up, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I started out in high school coaching, and people said, did you change much? And I went high school, junior college, college, and NFL. I said, I was always Dick Vermeil, to a fault and sometimes to a strength. But I just never changed. And I didn't coach an NFL football player any different than a kid did at the kids at Hillsdale High School. Now, they made a lot more money, and they were bigger and faster and stronger and brighter in terms of football. But I think as a coach, you have to be yourself and work within the framework of your own personality and your own talents. And That's how I approached it. But I, the first time around, I thought the only way we could win was outwork somebody. So we just kept adding hours to the day when pretty quick you didn't have any hours left. And we still got beat from time to time.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, we want you to join us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, as we're having a candid conversation with NFL coaching legend Dick Vermeil. Here in just a moment, we're going to transition. One of the things I got to ask you about is when you coached, even at the high school, the collegiate level, were you as emotional? Because you obviously, you shared your emotions with your players.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's a strength, sometimes it's a weakness. I don't know, but you have to be yourself. And I've always been a very emotional guy. And I've always been that way. I've always been emotional. Yeah, high school, junior college, college, pro football. And I walked into NFL stadiums and hear someone yelling, said, "Hey, Vermeil, why don't you cry for me?" You know, I feel like up yours, you know.
Hey, Dick Vermeil, just a few more moments this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to transition. Talk about the hobby that has turned into a post-football career. What was the inspiration to get into the Vermeil wine business?
Well, I was born in Calistoga, the north end of the Napa Valley. My grandfather, Vermeil, made all the Vermeil wines. We didn't have any labels on the bottle, and I grew up, along with my brother Stan, helping my grandfather from time to time with the physical sides of it. And I was fascinated by it and the process, and not that I learned to make wine, but I appreciated what it took to make wine, and also grew up in a family where wine was appreciated on the dinner table. It's not a drink as part of the meal. Mm-hmm. And there was great memories. And so I started making wine in the 90s for fun with friends in Calistoga that I grew up with. And we make 150 cases, had a Vermeil label on it and that kind of stuff. And the little winery that made it sold it with our name on it, Vermeil name on it. And then in 2008, some friends with money, good, successful business people, said, "Let's take your wine process, all your connections in the Napa Valley, and turn it into a full-fledged business." Well, I said, okay. So my name's on it, so I put in more time than everybody other than the one person that's assigned to the business side of it. I'm assigned to trying to sell it. But we make good wines. We win awards. We just won awards here for our 2012 vintages. These wines in front of us have won gold medals and gotten 90s and 90-plus scores and all that kind of stuff. So it's more competitive than the NFL.
I was going to say, how competitive is the wine business?
Well, we have 32 teams in the NFL all striving to be the best. The Napa Valley got 500 wineries, okay, and nobody makes bad wine. You know, you can't afford to make lousy wine. If somebody has convinced you that Vermeil wines are really good, it's going to taste better to you. If you add somebody's name to it, you know he's a great winemaker. You automatically give him credit for being good wines. You give him credit. I've noticed that so much. And a little guy could make better wine than somebody with a bigger name, and it won't receive the recognition because it's not supposed to be as good. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, NFL coaching legend, the great Dick Vermeil has been joining us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We sincerely appreciate you dropping by. We send our best to Carol as well. We look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you very much.
Stick around. Much more straight ahead.